Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. On this episode, we have a TV mashup game, spoiler-free reviews of The Broken Hearts Gallery, The Babysitter, Killer Queen, and Netflix's controversial film, Cuties. Yes, that one. Don't ban us. And our topic this week are the most satisfying TV character exits ever. Also, stick around because we are giving away five, count them, five digital copies of Psycho in this episode, so you don't want to miss that. Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson, and joining me today are my fellow hosts, John Davenport.
Hey, Aaron, how you doing today?
I feel like it's been a while. It's been a while since we've done this, right?
I think, it has been. Actually, you know what? What happened to time?
So, yes? That's what we're going for. Okay, and Amanda Sink?
Hello, hello!
Aw, I've gotten quite a few requests about where you guys at, because we were off Labor Day, and people missed us. That's nice to know.
Well, you still did an episode.
Not Labor Day, I didn't.
Oh, the week after?
No, this is the week after, Amanda. What happened to time?
That's what I said.
You did an episode. You released an episode. That was just you.
That was just on Patreon.
Oh, well, I guess you'll find Aaron on Patreon the week of Labor Day.
That's true. I was off and I had nothing to do and you guys were like off and you're like, we enjoy our vacation. So probably everybody's searching the internet looking for those Chris Evans picks. That's where everybody was, I guess.
Also, I'm just over here looking for Chris Evans picks. Don't worry about me.
I love so much. They're not hard to find.
Wow.
But they are hard. What I think is funny is Aaron used to be like the big one about how tired he was and overworked he is. And he does so much and podcasts this and he just needs a break from podcast. And he doesn't even like the word podcast in normal conversation. Mm-hmm. We take a break. And he's so bored with not doing a podcast that he does a podcast on his own.
Yeah.
So I don't think I ever want to hear you complain about how you need time away from a podcast because you simply cannot take it.
I think you misconstrue, this is a long day to I don't want to. It's not a complaint. It's just me speaking. That's how I speak. And it comes out in complaining terms.
Yeah, but if you can't, you're like, oh, don't talk. I don't want to talk about podcasts in a normal conversation.
Well, I don't, and you are. So let's move on. All right. So we've got our news roundup, which is where we talk about everything that's happened in the past week in news. And man, there is some cool stuff. Carol Baskin is still on the lam, and she's on Dancing with the Stars. And her late husband's family took out an ad that aired during her episode offering $100,000 for info on his disappearance. That's hysterical.
Good for them.
And wrong. We don't know. Come on. Last week, Tonight was renewed for 3 seasons at HBO. Mulan debuted in China, but China ordered the media to not cover it. Next time you think you think America is just like China or UK, think again. They can just do that, apparently. Wonder Woman 1984 was moved from October to Christmas Day, and Candyman was moved to 2021. Disney has also decided to move Black Widow and Soul out of the holiday release spots, so those are going to undetermined dates at this point. Borat 2 has already been shot and screened. It happened. Deal with it, I guess. Fast 9 has allegedly, Amanda, confirmed by Ludacris and Michelle Rodriguez that they will be going to space in some form.
How is it allegedly if they say the words?
I'll talk about it in a second.
I did.
And there is an ongoing boycott on Netflix that is resulting in Netflix losing subscribers, according to Yahoo Finance, all over the Cuties movie, which we're discussing later. So hold your thoughts on that one till later. Doogie Howser is getting a Disney Plus spinoff set in Hawaii with a female doctor called Doogie Kamalahoa. Nope.
Kamalea.
Kamalahoa.
You are...
It's one of those
ways.
I mean, you're pretty close,
I think.
Kama Aloha. I don't think, how many Hawaiian listeners do we have? I think Hawaii is the best state in the whole wide world. So there, I made it up for it. And CBS All Access is rebranding as Paramount Plus. John, of all of that, minus the cutie thing, because hold that thought. What stood out to you in the news this week?
I'm really kind of upset that I have to wait till 2021 to get my Wonder Woman right now.
No, Wonder Woman's Christmas. So that's technically this year.
Well, it'll probably be 2021 anyways, but yeah, you're right. It's Christmas. And You know what? Now that you put that spin on it, I'm actually happy that I'll get Wonder Woman for Christmas.
It feels like the best kind of present.
It really does. On top of that, I also would like to really pour one out for Diana Riggs. I mean, that's losing her is unfortunate, and she was one of the best characters on Game of Thrones, and it's just kind of sad. But like, to me, who she was growing up was always one of the Avengers in the original TV series, The Avengers.
Yeah, I didn't mention her. I was going to bring her up later when we do our topic because it kind of coincided. But you're right. Diana Rigg passed away, and she was an Avenger before the Avengers. She was a different kind of Avenger.
Yep. She was one of those British bad teeth Avengers.
But with great teeth.
But with great teeth.
Fantastic.
She was so awesome in Game of Thrones.
She was. Tis Cersei.
The
queen.
It was
me. It was me. And Amanda, Fast 9. Okay, so yes, Ludacris and Michelle Rodriguez referred to it. But if you like read their actual quotes, I mean, it can also be taken as they were just like, oh, yeah, you heard about that? Weird. I wasn't supposed to get out. It was like it could almost be jokingly. So and it could just be maybe they're doing a Halo jump because a Halo jump would technically be space. Kind of. I mean, there's a lot of ways they can take that. I don't think they're going to be zipping around on a space shuttle.
Halo jump in cars?
Yes! Of course! Why wouldn't you?
Well, they've already, like, dropped cars out of a plane from high altitude and driven them to the ground. So I guess a Halo jump with cars wouldn't be too different either.
Totally. We called this many, many years ago. People were like, I called this, in 2012, we started talking about this. I'm just letting you know. It's been a while.
Well, they already had like a robotic motorcycle in one of them. We're only a fart away from a robotic velociraptor.
I'm telling you, Universal owns Jurassic Park and Fast and the Furious. I want a crossover. I want to see Vin riding a velociraptor or a T-Rex velociraptor because they have a lot of family so they can all bond together. I think that would be fantastic.
Clever girl.
Amanda, anything stand out to you?
Well, we kind of talked about most of it, I feel like.
you're so done with this. You're so done with
it. We hit most of it. You guys just did it really fast.
And no one really cares about the Doogie Howser reboot,
no,
huh?
No, don't. And I definitely don't want to hear Aaron try to mispronounce that again.
No, I think it's very important to get the name wrong.
And offend as many people as possible.
Now I'm just trying to roll it through my head as to how to say Kamaleoa.
Kamaloha?
There.
Well, the Kamaloha. A is a long A.
Kamaloha. Mahala.
That's not at all right.
You're welcome.
I don't think that works. I think we're probably going to get in a lot of trouble. But kudos to Carol Baskin's family. I'm with you, man. I think that's pretty cool and ballsy that they put
Who doesn't think that she did it? And you know what? Good for them, though, like because that is a lot of money that they're offering for information. And I think you were just about to say how ballsy it is. Heck yeah, in the middle of her show, which by the way, she should definitely not be on Dancing with the Stars.
Why?
But
she's
whatever.
She's technically a celebrity. In this culture, she's a star. Kim Kardashian's a billionaire over a porn tape. I think she counts as a star.
It's just gross.
And she's not convicted of anything.
I'm actually surprised that neither one of you guys can actually say her name right. It's not Carol Baskins. It's Carol Baskins that bitch.
I refuse to jump in there. Look, just
I'm pretty sure it's Carol Baskin. It's not Baskins.
Whatever. I want ice cream.
Okay.
It appears a certain way. Doesn't make it so. That's all I'm saying. It just doesn't make it so.
So she's
tell
not
that to
bitch?
Twitter.
Don't tell anything to Twitter. Twitter knows everything and everybody has an opinion. And all right, let's move on to our game. Remember, you can always find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com. Join our Facebook group, The Hollywood Outsider, where our every week our topic is posted. You can comment on it there, or we're on Twitter at BuyPopcorn. Now, our game this week, we're doing a TV mashup. This is where each of us is taking one or two TV shows, maybe three if it's necessary, and we're going to come mash them up to make a one fantastic TV show that we would love to see.
You know, I have another suggestion, too, to, like, switch up the TV mashup.
You know, it's great that you bring this up while we're recording, man. I think that's fantastic. You know, why plan ahead? Let's just go for it.
Also, but, like, so then people can chime in and say, ah, that's a great idea, or ah, that's a terrible idea. But if we all just brought one TV show, like, we all just pick one TV show, we bring it, and then we each have to somehow combine it into a new story. Because they're probably not going to fit normally all together. Like, we're now picking TV shows that we know could work together. But having to creatively find a way to mesh like Grey's Anatomy and The Boys would be interesting.
So is that your answer? Because I don't know what just happened.
Nope.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what happened either. We're just going on down this tangent. It's like, you know, let's play a game. First, Amanda's going to tell us about a game that she hasn't fully thought out yet. Boom, boom, boom.
I thought it out. You just don't understand it, or I'm terrible at describing it.
Did you though?
I did. I did.
Well, cool. Let's go with the one that we are actually playing, which is a TV mashup where you combine two TV shows and make one fantastic TV show that you would love to see. And you go first. That's why I thought that was your answer, because The Boys and what the hell was the other one?
I said The Boys and Grey's Anatomy.
That would be great. Kill everybody on Boys and Grey's Anatomy. I think that would be
Boys Anatomy.
They're all dying. There's literally one person left from the original show, from the original season. So my two that I picked to put together is, and I want to preface this by saying, first, let me explain before you jump on. I know they're in two different time periods. Lovecraft Country.
Wait, is that a rule?
No, there's no rule. It's take two, make it great. Go ahead. Don't have to explain anything.
I'm a little disappointed you started off with Lovecraft Country. Now, Jesus.
I feel like it's six minutes in of this game, and we still don't know what your two are.
Because you two keep interrupting me.
No.
Traditional male style.
It is not us. It is not mansplaining. It is woman talking.
This is not a patriarchy problem.
It is, though, Lovecraft Country and Stranger Things. And the reason I wanted to preface by saying, let me explain how this works, is because Stranger Things is obviously very 80s and Lovecraft Country takes place in the 50s. That's mm-hmm. very distinguishable to those shows. But what I think would be really cool is if in Stranger Things, there was some sort of like time portal that took them back into the 50s. Mm. And then they had to fight some of the monsters that show up in Lovecraft Country.
So your solution is... there's not enough white people in Lovecraft Country. That's what I understand.
Oh, no.
I mean, that's what you said. I didn't put words in your mouth.
Now I feel bad.
You should. You should really feel offensive because you were.
Stop. I thought it was a cool idea.
It is a cool idea. It is. I like that. Sorry, I took all the wind out of your sails. I think it's a fantastic show. What would you call it?
Oh, I didn't know we had to come up with a name.
You do now. It's a new
Lovecraft
part of the game.
Lovecraft Things.
Stranger Country?
Stranger Country. That one sounds like a rodeo show.
Yeah, or porn. Yeah, all right, so whose turn is it?
What kind of porn do you watch?
It's your turn.
Ones with strangers, that's what kind.
Oh, it's in the title that I go first. I was looking for after the description. That's why I was going to give my... Okay.
Amanda just looked at her format, everybody.
I read the big letters. I was only reading the little letters.
Just so you know, it is so clear. I couldn't paint it any bigger. But
I mean, it's not red letters, though. If it was red letters.
Exactly.
I just went with the little stuff.
My mashup. Oh, my God. We're never getting done with this game. I would combine Lost and Lost in Space. And you could just keep calling it Lost in Space. But... You know, but you would capitalize on the Lost. Basically, the Robinson family spaceship crashes on a mysterious planet / island. They crash on an island on a mysterious planet where they encounter other humans.
They crash.
I've got an H in there somewhere. They encounter other humans and creatures, and they're trying to find out exactly what's going on with this weird and mysterious place, which they will get answers to. So it'll be different. And at the end of the series, you'll find out that they were on Earth the whole time, but it's Earth like Planet of the Apes style, so it's many centuries into the future.
Interesting. I feel like you just didn't have a good one, so you're like, let me just look up two names of the same show.
Well, that's a really nice way to make it sound like mine sucks, but I appreciate that. I was really excited about that idea, and now I'm not.
That's really hurtful. His idea is actually not bad. It's not.
I was just joking. Oh my gosh. Why do you guys get to make jokes and I don't?
You know what? I'm fine with a very diverse cast in mine, Amanda.
Right.
How? Both of them are white people.
Okay, that's a good point. All right.
I was flashbacking back to one of the Stargate shows. There was Stargate Universe, kind of reminded me of Lost and Lost in Space smashed together. So I really like your idea.
Thanks, man.
No problem.
What's yours?
I'm not gonna be like unsupportive and like just try to poke at you with some poorly developed joke.
Wow! Shots fired. First of all, second of all, he did the same thing to me first.
That's true. In fact, I painted her in a bad corner. So
right.
Technically, I'm worse. But go ahead, John. What's yours?
Unfortunately, Amanda beat me to the Lovecraft Country cycle, but, you know, why not? You know, it's there, and it's such a great show, and I'm having a lot of fun with it. So what a great way to make Lovecraft Country a little bit more interesting and fun is to throw JD and Turkin into it from Scrubs. And so...
What?
That's
funny.
Like, I really like all the characters that we're running around with in Lovecraft Country, but I think if we took those characters and had just, like, the a brotherly love kind of friendship that JD and Turk had in Scrubs, where, like, it's just, it's hysterical how they behave with each other and how it's just so much love, and even keep it like JD and Turk, only they're constantly having to deal with this mystery, but it turns into something that's more like Scooby-Doo-ish, because the two of them can't stop flashbacking to other funny things, or throwing in some ideas from pop culture to make it even more interesting, like JD and Turk walking down the street and wearing zoot suits, you know, kind of thing.
That'd be great. Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah.
I would watch that. I would definitely
watch. So they're
still
medical professionals.
No, they're
idiots.
They're not still medical professionals.
I would debate that they were at the time.
Right. I just think the character and the relationship of those two characters thrown into the mix of Love Kind of Country, but you know, you got to make it work a little bit more. So JD and Turk are mechanics, or they work for Atticus's uncle's book company or something, where it's so like
the same kind of characters, though, but just in different
roles. The same kind of characters.
Yeah. So bottom line is these two love Lovecraft Country. That's what I'm
right.
Thinking.
Right.
I'm still behind on the show, but I thought it would be cool.
It's a cool show, but I feel like every episode is hit or miss for the most part.
Well, because they're different stories.
I know, and that's why.
No, they're not.
Well, they are. Yeah, they are. They're basically, same characters.
It's together, but it's separate.
But they're all contained. That's usually like one story in one or two episodes. So it's kind of separate.
They're different stories of Lovecraft.
Did you see?
Well, each story is interconnected to the other story. So it's not like it drops the story. It keeps going with the same thing. So they're all working together. I'm all caught up on it. So it's all working together to the same end.
So am I, but it's still separate. I mean, there are very much independent stories within the contained universe. Do you want to fight?
I'm done arguing about it.
Okay. Okay. All right. Well, Jonathan Majors just got cast as Kang the Conqueror in the Ant-Man and the Wasp 3. So that's
going to be pretty cool. That's interesting.
Yeah. I just hope it's not, I mean, because Kang the Conqueror is a big character. I would really hope that they would.
I don't know this character.
He conquers.
He does that. And he's got a blue face. Isn't
Thanos.
He also
he's a
an
blue
inhuman?
Face?
Yeah, he's Thanos-esque.
Oh. Right.
None of that was a word.
I thought he was actually an inhuman, isn't he?
Well, I'm just saying he's a big character. He's a big villain. That's what I meant. I'm alluding to he's
a
big villain.
And he's a time-traveling villain.
So he can go back and get all the Infinity Stones, and we can just start that all over again.
Right. Pretty much.
I like it. You know what I love in September? Psycho.
No. Why don't you tell us?
Psycho.
Oh, is it Psycho?
It's definitely Psycho. Yeah. See, this is the 60th anniversary of one of the greatest films of all time, and that would be, anyone?
Psycho.
Excellent.
Psycho!
What do I get?
You know what? You can possibly win a digital copy of Psycho, but bear with me because I want to tell you about something else first. Now available is the 4K Ultra HD combo pack of the Alfred Hitchcock Classics Collection with both a Blu-ray and a digital code included. The whole collection has Rear Window, greatest movie of all time, certified by Rotten Tomatoes critic Aaron Peterson, Psycho, Vertigo, and The Birds in stunning 4K resolution. That means not only is it clear, it's sexy. The Essential Collection also features hours of bonus features as well as the original uncut version of Psycho for the first time ever. It comes with a collectible disc book packaging, including hours of bonus features with such as documentaries, expert commentaries, interviews, screen tests, a whole lot more. You don't want to miss it if you're a big fan of Alfred Hitchcock or any of those movies, especially Rear Window, the greatest film of all time. There's a link to buy your copy of the Alfred Hitchcock Classics Collection in the show notes, and if you want a chance to win one of five. That's right, five Psycho digital codes direct from Universal Home Entertainment. Here's all you got to do. Ready? You send an email to psycho@thehollywoodoutsider.com. If it makes you feel better, psycho@thehollywoodoutsider.com with the subject line, I wouldn't harm a fly. Very important subject line, I wouldn't harm a fly. Then just make sure your name is in the email. That's it. I wouldn't harm a fly in the subject line. Throw in your name and send it to psycho@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Send it in no later than Tuesday, September 22nd to be entered. That's Tuesday, September 22nd to be entered. Winners will be announced in our Psycho episode next week. One last time, psycho@thehollywoodoutsider.com.
That seems like a really easy way to win this Psycho thing.
It seems pretty simple, right?
Yeah. Like a lot of the stuff you get when you win stuff online is that you know, the share this the most and you might win this. Or, you know, there's also the make sure you like this page and make sure you sign your email away to this other email that'll start emailing you a whole bunch of other stuff that you really don't want. But because we have your email and we're going to send you, you know, maybe you'll win something.
We're not doing that.
I mean, this is, yeah, this is so much cooler.
I promise you, you'll get nothing else from after this thing is over. You won't get anything else from us. We're not going to use your email to, well, I mean, I might open an offshore account. Aside from that, I don't think we're going to use it for anything else.
Definitely not an inshore account.
Why would that benefit anybody? Got to hide the funds, man.
Right.
Let's go to our spoiler-free reviews this week. We've got three. One of them is Cuties. We'll get to that one last, but let's go to the Broken Hearts Gallery first.
So the Broken Hearts Gallery is about a woman who was dumped by her boyfriend. She's a New York art gallery assistant who creates an exhibit for souvenirs from past relationships. Aaron, you saw this and it sounds like it could go either way. It could be really cool and interesting and maybe lively, and she finds her way to get over this, or it's really sad and maybe a little pathetic. Where does it go?
It's really fun and sweet and upbeat. I don't like romantic comedies. I'll start with that. I just don't enjoy them. Every one of them feels really similar. I really like the concept where she's often brokenhearted. She's been through a lot of relationships and she keeps mementos from all of them. I mean, she's kind of a hoarder when it comes to that. And her name is Lucy. She's played by Geraldine Viswanathan. And she was in Blockers, if you saw Blockers. Very just charming and engaging and always full of energy. And she just feels like when she walks into a scene, the scene just pops. You know, she's just like, This is definitely a star-making vehicle for her. And it's very fascinating take on romantic comedies because it's more about this woman finding the ability to let go of her past relationships and also meeting Nick, who's Dacre Montgomery, who everybody knows from Stranger Things, badass Billy from Stranger Things.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And here he's a very sweet, kind of mild man. It's definitely a different character than we got in Stranger Things. And he's very good. I mean, but he doesn't have what Geraldine does. She just has that it factor. She just pops. And I thought Montgomery had that in Stranger Things. Here, I think it's really her turn to shine. And it's just a cool idea. I mean, it's just open a gallery full of other people's mementos from broken relationships. And it really comes together swell. Like, I really enjoyed it. I was laughing the whole time. I smiled the whole time. I never regretted being there. I enjoyed it.
So this is actually Natalie Krinsky's directorial debut. It looks like she's done mm-hmm. some other TV show writing, but as a film writer, which is, it's very different than TV writing, and for her debut, what did you think? Does this come across as a debut, as somebody who's just getting their feet wet in directing, or does it seem really well put together?
No, it's really well put together. It's smartly written. It's clever. There's a side character, Molly Gordon as Amanda, who, if you look at her, she reminds me a lot of like Brie Larson. I thought she was Brie Larson's sister the entire movie. She is hysterical. She's obsessed with murder and her boyfriend never speaks, but she's very witty and quick and just the writing really pops for actually Lucy's whole trio of friends. They really, really have a great bond together and the dialogue is always flowing and engaging. And that's definitely a testament to the writing. Which is a compliment. And the pacing is sleek. It moves. I never feel like where I do in a lot of romantic comedies where I'm like, God, just get to the part where they all make up and they just make out and leave. You know, that's how I usually feel in these kind of movies. I'm just like, oh, just get to the same thing I've seen 1,000 times. You know, where's the boombox? Hold that up over your head. Is that still a thing? Do that. Whatever it takes. Make them smile. Kiss. Get done. Didn't have that moment because everything was really paced very smoothly, very fluidly.
So it kind of sounds like it could be skewed towards even maybe a little bit of younger audiences. Is that the case? Or because we're talking maybe some sexual mementos of relationships, like where does it fall? Could you take younger kids to go to see this movie, or is it more adult?
Well, I mean, there was a family of all ages in front of me. So, or Sorry.
Well, that doesn't mean
four
anything.
Rows in front of me. Yeah, that just meant bit parenting. There's definitely some dildo joke. I mean, it's adult entertainment. I mean, it's okay. Not raunchy or anything by any means, but it's honest. I mean, it feels genuine. It feels like real conversations that people have for the most part. So I don't think you would take little kids, but it's definitely for
like 13, 14 year olds. You could probably take
13 to 50. I mean, it covers out old age. Making sure I'm in the bracket. You know what I'm saying?
So if the full price of admission were $10, what are you giving the Broken Hearts Gallery?
I give it $6.50. I think people should check it out. It's in theaters now. There's one negative, though, I should mention.
Mm.
Okay. This is something I don't often complain about in a movie because I can usually roll with it. But the costume designer. Ooh, oh. Picked out these outfits because Nick has ankle biter pants on at one point. Lucy has clothes from Hot Topic or some nonsense. I don't know what. I am not a fashion maven or icon by any shape or stretch of the imagination, but I am Gucci compared to the dress, the cast in this. For whatever reason, I just thought the clothes were not flattering for most of the cast. There you go.
That is a weird. It stood out. Yeah, that's very strange, especially for just like a rom-com type of film.
Well, it's strange for Aaron.
Yeah, it's bad when he notices it.
I was very focused on it. I'm like, why are his pants so short? I mean, did they a fitting for, was there a smaller, was Kevin Hart cast first? You know what?
They're not bringing back high waters, are they? Yeah.
They're ankle biters, man. They were like above his ankles. Why? He's a handsome fella. And there's at one point where he's wearing this white t-shirt and I'm sure, you know, he's broke and that's a big part of it. But I mean, it was broke as broke. You know, it's a homeless broke. That's different than just broke. That's all I'm saying. It's just something I noticed. The next film is The Babysitter, Killer Queen. It's a sequel to The Babysitter. 2 years after Cole survived a satanic blood cult, he's living another nightmare. High school. And the demons from his past still making his life hell. Now, John, the cast all returns except star Samara Weaving. Is the movie as enjoyable as the first since you don't have the person that made it really pop to begin with?
You know, for the most part, it actually is as enjoyable as the first one. And if you watch them back to back, it turns it into a really fun party because of the speed and the delivery of everything. There's not a lot of wasting time. There's not a lot of trying to build more of a story than there really is. It's really just all about having fun. And Emily Allen Lind, who plays Melanie, she's actually in the first movie as a friend of Cole's, and she shows up then. Now here she is older. She kind of takes the reins of that B role, that which is Samara Weaving's character. She takes the reins of that and pushes it to a different degree of evil, and it really works.
You say it works. What makes it work? I mean, is it because it's that horror comedy mix that the first one had? Is it just because the characters are so having such a great time with it? You know, what about this one? Is it pretty much the same kind of experience as the first movie?
It's almost exactly the same kind of experience as the first movie. You know, you have all the same people from the first movie, which if you saw it, you're like, wait a minute, how does this happen? Especially when you watch the trailer, you're like, how are we here again? And the way they really build it up is they start this story off trying to convince you that Cole had a episode in the first movie, and that's why he was able to tell that story, and nothing really kind of made sense. And so, yeah, it continues on, and the way these characters are behaving on screen are, like, these actors are having the greatest time they could ask for. Robbie Amell, who is in both those movies, these movies, I've said it before, in most of the things I've seen him in, he's kind of milquetoasty. Upload, he's actually much more of a character. He has much more range that he exhibits. And the movie that he just did with his cousin, that was also on Netflix, I think Code 8 or Section 8 or something
Code
like
8.
That.
Code 8.
Again, he's there. He does okay, but he's still kind of really milquetoasty. In this, he is having the greatest time. He's walking around with his shirt off, and there's no real rhyme or reason behind why he's doing it. He just looks great while he's doing it, though. And then you've got Bella Thorne, who I don't know where she came from or what she does, but she's pissing off the internet, but she's having a good time here. You know, Hana Mae Lee, again, somebody who I don't really recognize from a lot of things, but she's having fun. I mean, everybody is just having the best time playing their characters.
Yeah, Bella Thorne's probably happy because she's rich off OnlyFans, you know?
I mean, wouldn't you be happy if you were rich off of OnlyFans?
Yeah, I mean, I don't even think she sent him any naked pictures. It's pretty... Google that. Is there enough here that warranted a sequel? And would you want to see another movie, or are you good at this point?
Actually, I'm surprised that they were able to fashion enough together to make a sequel, because I thought the way the first one ended was pretty finite. But and there's also a lot of surprises that I'm not bringing up here that they were able to bring in, and it works wholly and completely. And then the way they finished this story is I can't imagine them finding another way to bring this back.
Which means they're totally going to. So if $10 full price permission, what do you give The Babysitter, Killer Queen?
Killer Queens gets $7.
Wow, good time. Now let's move to a movie where it's not very comfortable to have a good time, Cuties.
All right, so you guys got a chance to sit down and watch Cuties. It's on Netflix right now. Amy, an 11-year-old girl, joins a group of dancers called the Cuties at school and rapidly grows aware of their burgeoning femininity, upsetting her mother and her values in the process. This is directed and written by Miamuna Decor. And stars Faith Yusuf, Melinda Ells, you know, a whole bunch of little girls that you don't know.
You should not know, I guess.
Yeah, I would prefer if people did not want to seek them out at this point. Yeah.
It's probably safer for everyone like this. This is the director's second role as a director, or second time as a director. And what do you guys think about what she put together here?
Amanda, you're a girl. You were probably 11-year-old girl, so this probably hits you in a different way. So I just want your take.
Probably, yeah. There's a lot of content in here that doesn't feel wrong. There's a lot of it that, you know, I'll be quite honest, when you're 11 and 12 years old, especially now, it's gotten worse even since I was a kid. The comments about sex and learning about, you know, areas and parts and sexual experiences in our bodies and girls wanting to look like the sexual girls that live and love their body and are showing that to the world and are trying to emulate that. That was all pretty consistent with what I experienced growing up too. So that did not feel abnormal. I thought the story and what it was trying to go for was actually pretty great. However, it's really, there are a few moments that are just really uncomfortable because of the camera work. And I really feel like most of it comes down to the camera work. If we didn't linger on, you know, the little girls behind or something, we wouldn't feel as uncomfortable because then we're focusing on what the film is representing rather than the individual who's doing that. And that's where it becomes a problem to me. And I'll kind of save some of those comments for later. But I think overall, the concept that she was going for was really great. And I think it encompasses what it's like to be a girl and to be an outsider and trying to fit in with the cliques. And the popular cliques just usually happen to be the girls that show a little bit more skin and happen to be a little bit more erotic or, you know, willing to do a little bit more than the average girl. And so those that are trying to fit in sometimes do what they can to adapt and mold into that. And it's really unfortunate, but it's just reality. That's just how it is. And so there's a lot of girls who do things that they normally wouldn't do because that's what they see other girls doing. And they want to be part of their friend group.
Yeah, and I want to clarify, it's Decor's first feature directorial debut. She directed a short. So it is her second, but it's her first feature.
Right.
And got a lot of awards for this film.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's highly rated.
Mm-hmm. Not on IMDb anymore. Boy, they went after that one. They were review bombing. Fethi Yusuf, I really apologize if I butchered her name, but she plays Amy, and she's this broken girl. Her dad, she's Muslim. She's a French Muslim girl, and her dad is taking on a second wife. Her mother's devastated, but trying to uphold their religious values. And the girl is just struggling. I mean, she's really just struggling and going through a time where she's desperate to be liked and desperate to fit in. And this clique of girls and their sexy dancing is where she finds an outlet. You know, she wants attention. She wants affirmation. She wants what kids that age determine to be respect. You know, by being appreciated for your sexuality means that you're acknowledged in many ways at that age. And sadly, that is the way of the world. So here's what I say. In terms of the story, I know everybody wants to just jump all over this movie without actually watching it, but the story is very strong. Like, I actually think the story is great. There is 85 minutes of a great movie here and 10 minutes of some really poorly chosen filmmaking styles. And what I mean by that, and because I know I've had this discussion with many people, and I'll go into it in a second, but what Amanda said, it's a lot of the lingering. And I'll hold that because I know John has one more question in regards to that. But the camera holds in a very uncomfortable manner. And in fact, I'll probably just hold that until he does bring that up. But the movie as a story, it's a great story. There's just some issues with camera work.
Okay. You guys are both dancing around this a lot, and you know, I'm going to change gears and go right into some of this stuff real quick, or at least what I think is important, which is there's a saying in criticism that says depiction does not equal endorsement, and art should be able to address tableaus or taboos without necessarily advocating for them. So it sounds like you guys are having trouble, at least it looks like you guys are having trouble kind of discerning the difference between advocating for and or, you know, shining a taboo in your face that you don't know how to quite comprehend, or at least maybe you do comprehend. I'm being unfair by saying that, but like it's probably shocking and something you're not really used to. I really take it from here at any second, because I think you know where I'm going.
I'll jump right into it. Like, a lot of people are making this a very a partisan topic. It should not be a partisan topic, plain and simple. I will not have that argument with people because it doesn't make sense to me. It shouldn't matter what party you're with or what political alignment you have. I don't care. And I do respect art. I think art should be allowed to express and take chances. And there are certain kinds of films that should make you uncomfortable. This being one of them, this topic, you know, I am a father of a daughter, so I'm not a girl or a woman, and I never went through this, but I did go, I observed it having a daughter. And I can tell you that I think every girl goes through this at some point. And it's just a factor of the way television, the way entertainment, everything that they see is sexual in some nature. So at a very early age, and boys are the same way. It's not just girls. You know, nobody ever wants to talk about that, how boys are watching porn at 12 years old. Nobody ever wants to mention that, but they'll jump right all over this. And yes, it's a real thing. It's not a partisan issue. So please, whatever your politics, I don't care. And I'm just making sure that you understand it has nothing to do with politics. It is just personal taste. I watched this and I feel very uncomfortable. And you should feel uncomfortable with the subject matter. But like Amanda said, there are moments where she could have wisely chosen to cut away, to, we don't need to linger on a 11-year-old child's butt, or while they're slapping their crotch, which happens in the movie. There is, there's one great moment, and I do think this moment is great, even though it's kind of shocking and unsettling. Amanda, you back me up if you agree, or tell me I'm wrong.
Okay.
The first time we see one of the kids dancing is a very provocative dance, but you never see her face. You only see her from the back. Now, thankfully, I knew this is about 11-year-old, so I knew that. But if you didn't know that, there are people who this scene will make very uncomfortable, because you don't know it's an 11-year-old until the kid flips around.
Right, so, and you see her face. Yes. Because she's got really long, beautiful hair, and she could mimic someone older, which is part of the issue here.
Part of what they're going for, right?
Yeah.
Now, after that was a... Even though I think it did go on too long, and there's definitely too many of those lingering shots on derrières and whatnot, especially once you know it's an 11-year-old, it is a good enough way to make you uncomfortable and realize this is not right. You should not be supporting this at this point, you know, at this collaboration at this point. You should know this is a concern. But the thing is like, there are multiple times, and it's only like 10 minutes in the movie, but there are several times where the camera just holds on a girl's bum, or whatever she's doing, like holds on certain parts of a girl's anatomy, and that for too long, for just an uncomfortable amount of time. And the way that I prefaced this when I was explaining it to somebody was, I'm a dad. So if I were to take the same video of any, I get it, I'm not making a movie or anything else, but like say my daughter was a dancer or something like that, and or my niece or whatever, and I took that video at that age and someone else saw that, that would be enough to at least get me an inquiry or get DCFS called to my house. And that should be a sign that that's too far, is how I would put it.
So I think what's really important here is that the film itself is not necessarily the problem, the content. We've already dissected that the camera work needed a lot of work, and I think would change the perspective that so many have for the film, the disgust. And I do believe there's a lot of people who have never even watched it and just right. strictly went off of the marketing, because the marketing, let's just be completely honest, was brutally disgusting. It should have never happened. Even if they were not understanding what the film's intent was about and what it was for, they knew that these were kids, and they took that one tiny little excerpt, which I swear that video scene, the dancing scene, lasted like 5 minutes maybe. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that they used for the marketing, and that's what blew this up. And whether that was intentional or not, I have no idea. Nobody really does. I'm sure it was unintentional for it to be that, but that was not okay. That person should definitely lose their job.
And I don't advocate for people losing their job. Like, I'm just not that guy, but whoever made that, if you think that's okay, then yeah, I'm okay with it. I am.
Yeah. But this
with, okay the, with the, them losing their job, not with the trailer.
Yeah. The commentary on, it's not even just sexual exploitation of women, because it's more about the female perspective of what they should be doing. Like, there's moments where these young girls think that their bodies are the answer to getting them out of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very real. That is very real. And there's moments where the older men in the film don't turn away. And that's very real. As a woman now, and a girl who grew up with a well-endowed body, that is very, very real. That grown men will look at women that are girls that are young and their bodies are growing, but maybe they're growing a little bit more than others, and they're showing their skin a little bit more or whatever. And men will look at that, grown adult men. And it's disgusting. Mm-hmm. And this film does a good job of pointing that out, and also pointing out that girls don't necessarily desire to be quote-unquote sluts and whores, as they're referred to in the film, but they want to try to fit in, and they're doing everything that they can to not be picked on and bullied for everything that they are. And you're less inclined to get picked on and bullied if you use your body in a sexual manner.
And likes, they attribute likes on social media being appreciated, which it's a mental game.
Yeah.
Which is interesting that you both are going on like this about it, because there's two things I have about it to have to add, which I didn't see it. However, I did spend some time reading interviews with the director, and she's also the writer, and her whole purpose behind writing the story and shooting it the way she had it shot and telling the story was because when she was out and about, she saw this dance troupe of girls who are all this age, and her first thought when she saw them dancing around as if they were adults, her first thought is, what are they doing? They have no business being out there doing this. Like, they're little girls. And she decided to spend a year talking to these girls, interviewing these girls, to find out every aspect of their life that made them choose to act and dance this way. Mm-hmm. And that's how she developed this story. Because, again, it's something to me where, at least listening to her say it, it's something where she wanted to expose this world and enlighten people, as many people as she could, to this world and what motivates the world and what pushes it forward. So, but listening to the reaction you two have about it, as far as the lingering shots and how it's done, it kind of, I would actually sort of liken it a little bit to the scene in 12 Years a Slave, when we watch him get hung and the camera just sits on him the entire time.
Where it's trying to make you uncomfortable. And
I'm not saying that they're the same thing. So before anyone says, I'm trying to say that they're the same thing, but the using the shot as a tool is trying to elicit an emotion, and that's why it sits for as long as it does.
And I get what you're coming, where you're coming from, and I think that in some cases that can be an effective tool, but I think part of the problem is these actresses are still children. Mm-hmm. So we are not just using this film as a way of art and a tool to showcase the problems. We're actually being part of the problem if we linger on actual child actresses and their physical bodies. And that's where I think the real problem is. The problem to me does not lie in the film or the fact that we're looking at this, because quite honestly, we don't ever see anybody complaining about Michael Bay films when he does exactly this to 18-year-old girls.
I do all the time.
No. Okay.
But they're legal.
If you listen to the show for a while, I do all the time.
Yes. It's a great argument. It's legal. It's legal. It's still absolutely disgusting that grown older men are fantasizing over 18-year-old girls whose brains have not even fully developed. They are still technically a child at 18 years old. And part of the problem that this film is trying to show you is that seeing those 18-year-old girls and seeing the way cameras look at their bodies when they're by definition legal, you know, in the state and the government's eyes, but not in their actual physicality. They have not finished developing. Mm-hmm. And yet the cameras are focusing on them in a sexual manner, and that's what their value is. And that's where these little girls are getting that concept from. And that is very true in reality. That's not just something that's in film. That's something that is so true and beholden to little girls that they see that and they're like, that's where my value is. That's why I'm important. I'm important when I show my body. And that's what this little girl is starting to understand until she realizes, no, that's not who I want to be. But the problem that I have with this film, and it's really the only problem I have, is that we're still looking at a child's body. We're not taking a grown adult woman who's pretending to be a younger girl that makes it, exactly. You know, there's a big difference between, you know, even though it's disgusting to me, an 18-year-old girl who is of legal age to make that decision about how she wants to show her body for a piece of art versus an 11-year-old or 12-year-old girl. I don't know the actual ages of the actresses, but they're young enough that they haven't developed. And there's a moment where we see what we presume to be and what I can assume to be a video clip of a girl and her nude body. And I mean nude body. Mm-hmm. And she's supposed to be a child. That is too far. You could have easily clipped away from that, not shown the body, and then just said, you know, they say, oh, watch your boob. You could have still heard that from the video clip and not actually shown that to the audience. Well, that's where my problem is.
Yeah. Wait, was it a wait, hold on.
Like a naked titty.
Okay, so a naked titty in France, right?
It could be, but we don't know if those girls in that video were legal or not, to be fair. I mean,
they look very young.
They do.
And it's little girls looking at them.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but in France, which is where this movie's from, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's French.
The standards of decency in France when it comes to like wearing bathing suits and stuff like that are different, are they not?
They are different. John, I get where you're going with, but I'm telling you, I get where you're going.
I'm just trying to be very careful with it because I don't want to sound like I'm just saying that you're upset because you saw this scene, whereas in France, this exact same scene isn't as hurtful or damaging. Mm-hmm. Because that's how they go to the beach.
Hang on, before you go, I don't want to get dislodged from the whole point. When Amanda she was just referencing just one tiny little thing.
That's not
the biggest part. Like the biggest concern is lingering on these 11-year-olds. That's where the focus should be. That's where the biggest problem is.
Okay.
Is in how that's presented, because if you've got 18-year-olds that are pretending to be 15-year-olds, okay. I mean, you can make that work. You can mentally make that work. These are definitely kids and they're definitely doing very sexual things. My thing is like, you can't come out and say your movie is against over-sexualizing children when you're contributing to the same sexualization of children. And that's what happens by lingering. And that's why I was mentioning the girl at the very beginning of the movie, because once you make that point that this should make you uncomfortable, mm-hmm. and you continue to do it, you are part of the problem. Like Amanda said, that's when you become part of the problem, because from that point forward, you don't have to show all of that to get your point across.
Yeah, the point was made.
It becomes gratuitous if you continue to do it. And it is, I mean, don't get me wrong, it's probably like five scenes. But when she says linger, like we say linger, we mean linger, like seconds are lingering.
And we're talking like close up. Like we're not watching the full body movement, which that, you know, it's gross. And you're like, oh my God, I just feel so bad for these girls. I just want to tell them, like, you don't have to act this way to find mm-hmm. solace in your life. But that's different than zooming in on their butt while they're twerking and literally just holding the shot for like maybe 3 seconds. And 3 seconds feels so much longer when you're just like, uncomfortably, and I appreciate that they're trying to make you uncomfortable, but I think to Aaron's point, they made that point already, and after that, you don't need to linger so specifically on those aspects of their body.
The subtlety of a jackhammer is, I believe, what someone said.
Yeah.
And I wanted to agree with that.
Yeah. So there's the other side of it too, where people are just ravaging this film, not watching it. I know they don't watch it because I know they don't watch films that are in other languages. And
I know I saw it was 7 in the top 10 on Netflix, and I'm like, this? They had to read the whole movie. They just popped it on so they could say, I saw it. They watched 30 seconds mm-hmm. of the credits and turned it off.
Because the film, it really, I appreciate what they're trying to do. It was just the camera work, because we're still, regardless of what content we're talking about, and, you know, that these are supposed to be 11-year-old girls. And to be fair, they're in a dance competition that's supposed to be for older girls. But still, these child actors are still being exposed. And that's what's uncomfortable.
So, yeah.
So all that being said, if you guys had to give it a score, Amanda, what would you give it?
Ah, this is tough. I'm probably going to say a 5. You know, it's...
Aaron, what's your score?
Okay.
I guess John's told us we've gone on too long.
Somebody gave me the wrap it up single.
That's true. 5 as well. Same reasons Amanda didn't get to say.
All right, I didn't see it, and I'm not giving it a score because I didn't see it.
Let's be honest, you'd have to read it, John. You have a problem.
They do have a terrible dubbing option, like real bad.
Well, most dubbing options are bad unless you go from like a different language to Spanish.
I'll be perfectly honest. Like some foreign films I have a hard time with because if the accents are too, I'm just like, I get distracted because they're too harsh or strong, maybe.
For your ears.
Yeah. But French, it's always like, hey. Although in this movie, it's beautiful. It made it even more uncomfortable. I'm like,
yeah, it does.
Man, don't do it with French because that's, you know, no. French or Spanish.
And I just want to add, if you think your kids aren't like this, and I think some people have said it, get them off TikTok because they're posting stuff like this on TikTok. And I had, when I was 12 years old, had a peer in school who was pregnant. So don't tell me that sex doesn't happen around this age. It definitely does. Your children are interested in their learning, and it's not just your girls, it's your boys too. So
yeah,
if you think that this is uncomfortable, just imagine what's happening with your children.
Go in their bedroom right now, and I bet you they're like, nch, nch, nch.
Ew.
Stop it. Stop
we've
it.
All made dance videos where we've like shaken our butts and stuff because we think we're trying to be cute.
I don't think
no, we have. I have videos on MySpace if I could access
How long ago would I say we have to wrap this
MySpace.
Up?
MySpace. Like True. At least 5 minutes. You know what? Let's move on. We've got a topic, I think. Oh, no, wait. We got upcoming releases. There's stuff coming out. There's stuff coming out. There's movies.
A lot of stuff.
So up first on September 18th, we have Antebellum, a successful author. I have so much trouble with that word. Veronica Henley finds herself trapped in a horrifying reality and must uncover the mind-bending mystery before it is too late. This is directed by Jared Bush and Christopher Renz, and it stars Janelle Monáe.
Wow. Love her.
I love her as well. And then on VOD, also on September 18th, we have No Escape. A social media influencer and his friends find themselves in over their head in Moscow as the search for quality online content brings them to a sinister world. Following that, on Netflix, September 23rd, we have Enola Holmes. And this has become quite a conversation piece as well. While searching for her missing brother, intrepid teen Enola Holmes uses her sleuthing skills to outsmart Big Brother Sherlock and help a runaway lord. This has Millie Bobby Brown.
Oh, I can't wait for that one.
Okay, in theaters on September 23rd, we have Greenland, a family struggles for survival in the face of a cataclysmic natural disaster.
Right.
This is directed by director Rick Roman Yeah, let's go for it. And stars Jared Butler and Marina Baccarin.
Gerard Butler?
Marina Baccarin?
I said Baccarin. Maybe it is Baccarin.
You know what? We're an award-winning podcast. Maybe they should take it back because we can't pronounce a single damn name to save our lives. I know it's part of our shtick sometimes, but not this week.
And the problem is we practice. Like, we learn it, we research it, we practice.
I do not. I do. Do you really think the way that I pronounce names that I practice them?
I figured you'd be prepared.
John does.
I do too, but it just all comes crumbling down when the moment happens. So then on VOD, September 23rd, we have Ava with Jessica Chastain as an assassin who becomes marked for death by her own Black Ops organization after questioning orders and breaking protocol. What?
You said Jessica Chastain. We can't even get Jessica. I said Jessica. We can't even get Jessica right.
I can't even say Jessica anymore.
Oh, that's funny. All right, let's go to our From the Outside In topic. Most satisfying TV character exits. Now, they don't have to be deaths. We had this discussion earlier. It's satisfying. For whatever reason, your reasons, a character, a regular character, whether it be on a season or like the duration of the show, leaves the show at some point before the finale. Can't be the finale episode. That's not fair. And it was a very satisfying exit. That's what we're talking about. And this comes up.
Yeah, but we're all really dark and we went with deaths.
It's fair. All but, yeah. Actually, no, all of mine are deaths.
Yeah,
yep.
Lots of deaths. You know,
I just said that.
He did, but we weren't really listening. Diana Rigg played Lady Elena Tyrell on Game of Thrones and had one of the best character exits in TV history, which we mentioned earlier, with her famous speech where she instructed Jaime Lannister to tell Cersei, "It was me," right before she died.
Oh, God, she was so cool.
Beautiful moment. And that's the kind of thing we're talking about. Those exits that just make you go, yes, for
whatever
reason.
Okay, well, she still died in the show, so.
Still badass. She went out like a bamf.
She was. She sure did.
So, is how a character exits a TV show important to you as a fan? And can it, and this is an important question, can it ruin a show if they do it wrong?
You know, in thinking about this, prior to 2020, I would have said, meh, it depends on the character. However, I have now experienced the side of it where an exit was handled so poorly in a TV show that it nearly ruined the entire show for me. And it infuriates me every single time I think about it.
What show is that?
That's
How many
Grey's Anatomy.
Does infuriate have?
At least four.
Alex Karev, the way they handled his character's exit, it made no sense. The writing was so poor. It changed everything that character meant up to that point. And it just makes me so mad. My blood boils. So I think it's really important that they handle the way a character leaves the show right. Whether it's death, I don't even care if it's cliche. As long as it makes sense and it works, then it's okay. But if you just, we're just going to figure out how to sloppily write this character off, that can really destroy a viewer's interest in your show.
It really depends on the character, because sometimes I just really enjoy them getting rid of the wrong characters for a show. Whenever they find a character.
My God, Tom, on the Blacklist, when they killed him, I was like, yes, everyone.
You didn't
like,
even care.
Like, kill him, kill him, kill him.
You didn't care how it's done.
I did not care. Whenever people ask me, what's your favorite episode? I'm like, that one. What was the name of it? I don't care. One where Tom died. That one.
Right. Yeah, it's so great when they do it to a character you just can't care about, and or at least if they drag down the show. But when it's something like a beloved character, like I think about Angel with Charisma Carpenter's Cordelia, you know, the way they wrote her off the show in the beginning, you know, was to throw her into a coma after crapping out a baby from her front. So like, I didn't really enjoy that storyline.
Front.
Yeah, this is why he wasn't allowed to talk about cuties, Amanda.
Right. So, like, the whole idea of her just being left in a hospital somewhere was just kind of bad. And the way they treated the character in general didn't sit right with me. And yeah, it really changed the whole dynamic of the show moving forward. And it took a while. And I think about that a lot when it comes to Lethal Weapon. I wasn't interested to continue with Lethal Weapon when they kill off Martin Riggs.
Yeah. I mean, that one, oh God, that's a great example of a bad one too, because there's absolutely no reason they had to kill him off.
Yep, agreed.
His character, the very last episode, was headed out of frickin' town to start a new life, and they still had to kill him off, and they knew he was leaving the show. They totally did that to stick it to the actor, and that's where you say F you to fans, and that's not right.
Yep.
I just
right. That's the thing that's so irritating, and it changes the way that I think about those writers and that show and the showrunners and everybody. Because if you are that hellbent on ruining a show for your audience, which, hey, spoiler alert, that's how you get your money, just to stick it to the actor because you're pissed that they left or you're pissed that they did something that you don't like, that it drives me crazy.
Yeah.
It's just so morally and ethically just
no reason. No reason to do it. And then you spend the first episode of the next season having the guy that everybody knows hates the guy that left pretending to be mourning the guy that
right. Like,
mm-hmm. Was yeah, very, very stupid. Uncomfortable. Very uncomfortable. And also made it very hard for the new guy, you know, Sean William Scott, when he started on that one. But I have found that when a character leaves a show, you know, I think I really started noticing it with probably Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Joss Whedon's shows, because he would be willing to take out characters and, you know, like Buffy's mom and stuff like that. You know, those characters you expected would never leave the show, and it's how you handle them. 24, which I'll talk about in a little bit, did it with several characters as well, you know. So I really started to see this happen when serialized television started taking over, and you started seeing a lot of characters leaving mid-show, because with formulaic ones or ones that are 22 episodes, mystery of the week, that sort of thing, or case of the week, those kinds of shows, most times when the actors left the show, they didn't really even get an exit. I think, what was it? Elliot Stabler on what, SVU? He just came back in the premiere and he wasn't there anymore. You know, he transferred. What? Okay. That's how it's handled on procedurals. So it's really like a serialized thing that's come along in the last, you know, 15, 20 years. And I really noticed that I love it because it does give you a feeling of stakes on a serialized show. It gives you a feeling of there is real potential for danger for your characters if you're watching a show of that kind. And it's important to feel like that's real, and that's when you get those powerful exits. And it's powerful because you are attached to the character, so it's very important that if you're going to write them out and people love them, you better have a damn good exit, because it can ruin a show. It did ruin Lethal Weapon and other shows, and Grey's Anatomy, you know, for Amanda. So, yes, a character's exit, to me, is very important, especially
below. Another one I was just reminded of is Criminal Minds when Mandy Patinkin left. That one was...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It was so abrupt that you can tell they had no idea what they were doing with themselves, because, you know, for him, it was like, I don't want to go to work anymore. And he decided not to go to work anymore. And that's basically what happened. I do love, like, and it, you know, and the show like had a hard time finding its footing again. And then they brought in, Joe, I think it's Joe Montoya.
Mm-hmm.
And it was started to get okay again once that chemistry started to work its way out. But then, like, they wait 10 years later and kill Mandy Patinkin's character.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Like, you walk in, something happened to Gideon. We're going to go to his cabin. And then there's a body on the ground, and his face is covered, and it's supposed to be Gideon.
That's messed up.
And he got blown away by somebody.
Yeah, it can also be to the detriment of the show. I remember... I think it was Homeland. Yeah, Homeland. It was Homeland because of Damian Lewis.
Damian Lewis. Yeah.
He his exit was handled so perfect. I had no interest in continuing with the show. Because it got to the third season and his character was pivotal to the show. I know Carrie is the lead, but his character was very pivotal. And you get to his exit, and I thought his exit was so perfect for that whole storyline. I had no reason to continue with that show, and I eventually tried. And I couldn't get back into it because, to me, it felt like something was lost once that character was gone. So you can really screw a show up if you do it wrong.
Yeah, you really can.
Dexter, after Rita left, and Dexter, that was a big one. I mean, that was hard for that show to come back from.
Oh, yeah.
That's when I took a break from the show. I was like, okay, I need to take some time away from this.
Did you ever come back to it and finish it?
Years after it ended, only because I was like, all right, let's see what the fuss is about this last season.
Did you watch the finale in flannel?
I mean, of course. I live in Florida. We wear flannel all the time.
It's a lumberjack joke. All right. So let's do our top three. These are our top three personal choices for, and we got some listener ones we're going to mention as well, but our top three picks for the most satisfying TV exit. We're going to go John, me, Amanda, Ron, Robin. So your first one, what you got?
All right, so my first one is one that is one. It's one of those where I like it because the characters that this happened to were just not needed in a show that was already well established. And so season three of Lost introduced us to Nikki and Paolo, which is kind of annoying because we just spent the first 2 years of this show on a beach with a whole bunch of people, and you can recognize everybody. There's a guy over there who's constantly wringing out his shirt. There's old lady who's always digging through the sand. There's all these people that we always see on every single episode. And then season three, we got these two people who pulled the poles out of their ass far enough to walk their way out of the department store window. Like, I don't need them. And yet, it turns out they were a-holes the entire time anyways.
They tried to make them part of the show. They just realized it was not working.
And nobody wanted
that. Fans hated them. Hated them.
Right. Exactly. Because my point, we already know. Guy wringing out of his shirt all the time. The lady's always digging in the sand. We know those people. Those are people who don't need names. And we don't have to start throwing them names now. So, and the fact that the way they killed him was just such a fun death for them. They were like, here's a poisonous spider. Oh, look, they're dead. Nope, they weren't dead, but they got buried alive. And that's just perfect to me.
I just love that they basically said, okay, we get it. You guys hate these characters. We're going to kill them in the worst possible way we can.
Right.
I love that. My first one is Mags on Justified. Margot Martindale. She won an Emmy for this too. Her character, you know, I'm a huge Justified fan. If you've never seen it, it's on Amazon Prime right now. You can stream the whole damn show, and it's fantastic. We dug coal together. But her character was my favorite outside of the regulars, the real regulars. I mean, she was a season two regular. She ran this podunk country hillbilly outfit, and she ran it like the Godfather. I mean, she really had that Southern hospitality thing, where you never knew if she was going to kiss you or kill you. And it worked fantastic for the entire run of the show. And then on the season two finale, she knew she was caught. Raylan Givens, Timothy Oliphant, caught her. And she knew she could kill Raylan, but she'd spend the rest of her life behind bars. So she elects to kill herself with her own special moonshine poison that she'd used several times in the previous episodes. And her death scene going out, it's handled with both elegance and class and humility. So it was just very well done, extremely well acted, and it just broke my heart, which is very hard to do when it's somebody as lethal and nefarious as her. I mean, she was not a good person, but you really felt for her on those last moments. So I love that scene.
So my first one is George O'Malley from Grey's Anatomy. And at first, when I started thinking about these, I was trying to think of like villains, like bad people that I was so happy that they died. But then I started thinking about, and it actually came prompted with a conversation with Aaron, there are actually good characters that you love that had an exit that was meaningful, that was significant, and you felt like you gave them the proper send-off. And George O'Malley did receive like a lot of mixed messages and feedback from people mm-hmm. who were big time fans of the show because he was such a beloved character. And so his storyline prior to his death was that he was going to do trauma surgery. He joined the army and he was gone. So he was like a little bit off the show already. And all of these surgeons, then they get this horrible, disfigured, injured person who can't even speak. It's just a John Doe. They have no idea who it is. And it's from an accident where this person pushed a woman out of the way and saved their life. And they're trying to figure out who this person is. And so Meredith Grey is talking to this guy and, you know, who, you know, tell me your name. Feel free to write on the pen, like use a pen, like let's try to figure this out. And his ex-wife noticed a freckle on his hand and, you know, that started to prompt some things. But then he starts to write these numbers, 007. And that was 007 was his nickname from like the very beginning of the show. And so she realizes, oh, my God, this is George O'Malley. This is one of my best friends. He was unrecognizable and he ends up dying. And this is like, I believe the season premiere of it or the season finale. I can't remember, but I'm pretty sure it was the premiere that he dies. And it was just it was horrible because you didn't expect him to die because it felt like he already kind of had a send off. Mm-hmm. But it was also so magnificent that they wrote him off in a way that he did something amazing for someone else. He died saving someone else's life, which is kind of the whole point of their lives, as surgeons, is to save people's lives. And so that
I
was
thought it was to make
send-off.
Out and hook up with other doctors.
That is their, yes, that's definitely their
that's number two.
Their thoughts. But yeah, it was really sad. It was devastating. I think everybody that ever watched the show and got to that episode cried and bawled their eyes out because it was so sad. And you only knew like a few seconds before Meredith figured it out.
Mm.
And it was just because he did those numbers that he wrote down with the pen and figured out 007. And you're like, oh my God, it's George. That is this John Doe.
What if it was Pierce Brosnan? Like she got it wrong.
That would be really sad. They confirmed it though.
Okay.
And they donated his organs.
I got very excited.
Yeah.
Like maybe Brosnan just showed up. I mean, it's on, well, it's on a different network. Like, I'm trying to think of where that one show he did. Remington Steele. No, that was NBC.
Remington Steele.
Mm-hmm. What about you, John? What's your next one?
So my next one is Colonel Henry Blake from MASH.
Hmm.
And I chose him for a lot of different reasons. This is one of those ones that when I first saw the episode eons and eons ago, it really had an effect on me because, you know, here he is and he's been spending the last 3 years, leading this MASH troop and getting, and having fun. And yet the whole time he's missing his family and missing being home. And at the end of the third season, they find out that he's been discharged and he gets to go home. Yeah. To which...
That broke your heart, right? Because, I mean, he was huge.
Yeah, he was huge. I mean, he was a good part of the show. You know, and the thing is that his relationship with the two main characters, which are Hawkeye and Pierce, like the relationship with them was pretty strong and fun. But at the same time, it was kind of like samey. Like they were all the same kind of like weirdos. And it was hard. After a while, it gets really hard to like feel like you're watching something different or watching personalities clash because they just meshed together so well. And, you know, as the episode's going on, like, and everyone's talking about how much they miss him, the very last thing you find out is that his plane got shot down over the Pacific and he's gone. Now.
Oh, wow. That sucks.
It's a pretty powerful moment and it really hits you. One of the reasons why I like it so much though is that the thing that happens next is in the next season, we meet his replacement, which is Colonel Henry Potter, which was just a nice change in a character. So it was one of those instances where you had one character that made part of the show get replaced by somebody who almost instantly improves on the show just because of how much he's different from the rest of them.
Well, that's great.
And then you find out the backstory as to why his character got killed off. And it's kind of upsetting a little bit, which is the actor... Got himself a new job.
Mm-hmm.
He was going to go play on a sitcom. Alan Alda was pissed, and it was because it was mostly his show. He had him killed in the show, so he couldn't come back.
Hollywood ego at its finest, baby. Yeah. Well, we just talked about it earlier. That happens a little bit in Hollywood. When they get pissed at an actor, they make sure to kill him so they can't come back.
Right.
Even though they could have just retired in Texas. I'm just saying, for example.
Right. Why can't people just retire in Texas?
I mean, you know, it's a Lone Star State. So my second one is Nina Myers on 24. She killed Jack Bauer's wife. So she continued on the show. Everybody hated her at that point. Like she became the most hated character in 24's history. And she became a really fantastic villain because you don't really know how much of a villain she is until that final episode. Then she would come back, you know, later on in the show. And every time, like, she was just this character that Jack Bauer wanted nothing more than to shoot in the head and couldn't. He still had to work with her because he had to use her skills and her connections to thwart whatever, you know, was the issue at that current time. And then season 3 came along. And she's got one more card to pull and she endangers more lives. And Jack Bauer, for the first time in the show's history, like, he did a lot of stuff. But it was all in the name of security and safety and the country. But here, he committed straight-up cold-blooded murder. And people debate it to this day, but it was straight-up cold-blooded murder. I mean,
good for him.
Yeah. But it completely changed who Jack Bauer was as a character. And it also finally satisfied everyone in the audience. Because we kind of needed this. She's an amazing character, but she's also awful. So it was a really fantastic moment because he literally just stands over her and she's like, Jack, I've got something else to offer. And he just looks at her and says, no, you don't. And shoots her. I mean, it is cold blooded and people still debate. Well, that wasn't murder. I don't know what else you would call it. She's unarmed on the floor, literally with her hands up going, I got something else. You know, people say that she had a gun. Okay, whatever makes you smile. I mean, he killed her. But I loved it. Great scene.
For good reason.
Yeah.
Yeah, loved it.
So my next one is one that I think you're both going to enjoy as well, and it's Gus from Breaking Bad.
Face off!
Yeah.
I love that episode.
That one was so brutal. So Gus, he always seemed to be the guy who was one step ahead, and man, he thought he still was, so he goes to, it was like a retirement home, right? And he's sitting in there thinking that he's, you know, once again ahead of everyone. And he then suddenly realizes within seconds of this bomb going off that, oh, shit, I was wrong. this is when I'm going to die. And he tries to escape and he can't. And it was just brutal and brilliant. And you finally got to see this guy get what he deserves, which is funny because Walter White is a villain himself. Just not always in the show. Like, we root for him, even though he's bad. And we just wanted this guy gone so bad because he was making things so difficult for Walter White, for his character to succeed.
Even though it was mostly Walter White's fault that he was making it so difficult. Yeah.
And seeing that moment where he dies was just, like, glorious. And you were like, holy crap. It was unexpected, and it was great, and it was well-planned, and it was just one of those fun deaths too. Like, it was just so satisfying.
Yeah, that was one of those moments where it could have gone either way for me, because as soon as I realized he was dead, that almost ruined the show for me, because as much as the show was Walter White, it started becoming Walter trying to outsmart Gus Fring, but Gus Fring outsmarting him at every single turn. And once that was gone, I was like, I didn't know what to do with it anymore. But fortunately, the show was so well made that I didn't miss him after a while. But again, also that it's such an iconic image, Gus walking out of the room with part of his face missing. As far as like creating a shot, that is such a beautiful shot to make.
What I love most, I mean, I love that entire episode, and, you know, ding, ding, ding. It was such a great moment. And you're right, like him walking out half of his face is gone is fantastic. But what I love most is they literally tell you what's going to happen in the title. The name of the episode is actually Face Off. Mm-hmm. It's the actual title of the episode. But the whole time, all you're thinking is, well, this is because Gus is going against Walter White and vice versa. Right. I mean, it's a face off.
Right.
No. And actually, Vince
Gilligan,
thank you, was in a podcast interview. It was like right after this aired or a couple of years after it aired. And he was talking about that. And he said, I just thought it would be fun to put exactly what happened at the end in the title and see if anybody figured it out. Nobody did.
Oh, and it was so cool, too. So he's walking out. His eye socket is missing. His face is like, he's very the Dark Knight, and half of his face is just burned off. And he still takes a second before and he fixes his tie. And it was just like a perfect way for his character to go. And he was like, well, screw it. I guess it is what it is.
Well, it's so funny because, like, when Gilligan was talking about it, it was very much about, because that's where the show was really firing in terms of popularity. It was starting to really pick up and it was getting more popular and popular, and everybody was guessing what was going to happen. So, you know, and spoilers were everywhere. So that's why he just thought it was funny. And I think that's just a clever touch. Clever girl. All right. Last one. What you got, John?
So my last one, speaking of doing Breaking Bad, one of the saddest but most appreciating losses on that show was Dean Norris's Hank Schrader from Breaking Bad.
Man, I don't.
Oh, yeah.
Satisfying? Well, I guess his last seconds, right?
Yeah, because, well, I mean, let's pour out a Schrader brow, right? You know, that's the name of his beer. Let's pour out one for good old Hank. But, like, he spends the majority of his show always, like, trying to figure out what's going on, and it makes him look stupid and weak for parts of it because of what he goes through. But then he's the only one who figures it all out, because if just where he is and the position he's in and who he's related to. And then just the way he went out at the end, where, you know, you have Walter, who's a sniveling, conniving little shit, just like begging for his life. And Hank's just like, you're the dumbest person I know. You're the, you know, he made the decision to kill me 5 minutes ago.
Mm-hmm. I do love that where he's, you know, you're the smartest person, whatever that line was. And I'm sorry, I can't quote it on the top of my head, but I know which line you're talking about. But it's the fact that he goes out so brave, you know, like he never once, because Walter White has begged for his life multiple times. Jesse's begged for his life several times, you know, but he shows that he's always been the guy doing the right thing this entire time. And he refuses to be a coward at the end. And I just, I am with you, man. I love that scene. I love how that character played it or how the actor played it. I just love everything about it.
You know, I wouldn't have thought of that being a satisfying ending until I think Aaron, you just kind of sold it, where he sticks to his roots through the end, like through and through, he is who he is and makes no apologies for it. Mm-hmm. And that's something that's to be admired, because a lot of people would beg for their life. I mean, honestly, I would. I'm a coward, but he sticks by who he is and he's like, I don't care, you know?
Do you guys want to bet on if his wife buried him in purple?
Oh, my God. So much purple.
She couldn't bury him. The body was missing.
Yeah, well, she eventually got it back. Remember, at the very, very end, I think she gave coordinates or something where Hank was buried. Or he did. Walter did, I think, if I remember right. So my last one is, you know, I know when we talk about Game of Thrones when we started, which is the one a lot of people will go to, they will mention Joffrey because he had a very, very miserable death. Agreed. And everybody would rejoice.
He deserved it.
He deserved it. We rejoice. Ramsay Bolton got another sadistic death. We rejoice. We loved it. But really, the one for me was, and I guess it's multiple because it's the Red Wedding. It's Robb and Catelyn Stark in the Red Wedding are in my top three.
As satisfying?
Yes. And let me explain why. The first season, you have Sean Bean who does die. And yes, that's pretty tragic. And if you haven't watched it yet, I mean, really, that's on you. So that's very tragic, but I knew about that going in. So to me, it wasn't as much of a shock because people had spoiled it on the internet. Red Wedding, I knew nothing about. And to me, it was satisfying because yes, I love those characters. Yes, I really was so furious that they took them away from me, but I was so freaking surprised. It was like the middle of a season. I mean, it wasn't quite the season finale. Mm-hmm. It was two very prominent characters. Catelyn Stark was being, we were being led to believe, was becoming this huge foe in the universe. Robb Stark was just now starting to win the wars and stuff. And so we really thought there was a lot more to come from him. And both characters were taken from us in that same episode. And that was the episode for me, because of the Sean Bean, I already knew about that thing, where I've started to realize, wow, nobody is really safe. Like, we can't really get behind. And I love that feeling. That's one reason why I love that show. And that's kind of why they neutered it a little bit that final season, because there were many episodes where I think characters probably should have died versus all at the end, you know? And that was the one episode that really satisfied. Like, I love that episode. I love watching that. It's, even though it's horrible, when the song kicks in and the deaths begin, and the doors lock and then the deaths begin. I mean, I freaking love that, because Catelyn starts knowing exactly what's going to happen. She kills the girl, even though it isn't going to matter. Doesn't matter. You know, it's just, it's an incredible scene. Incredibly satisfying character exit.
I love the way everyone reacted to that scene, because those who went in there who didn't know what was going on, like, I had friends when we were watching it together just shot up in the air. They were sitting there and they're sitting there of a sudden it starts happening, and all of a sudden they're standing on their feet and they can't touch the ground, because their butts won't even touch the couch because they're just so shocked by what they're looking at, or the yelling at the TV screen, like, oh my God, I can't believe you're doing this again. You know, it's like the reactions to that was just incredible and so much fun to experience.
And all the book readers are just sitting there with their arms folded going, yes, I know this.
I drink and I know things.
Perfect. Last one.
So, my last one is from The Punisher. And the whole thing with Frank Castle's character is he now wants revenge and will go to any length to get revenge for the death and massacre of his family. Mm-hmm. And it was just this painful stepping of like recounting all of this horrific event that happened because he was the one who had a hit out on him. And it resulted in everyone that he cared about dying. And the moment where he gets to William Rawlins, who was the guy who put the hit out on Frank Castle and basically is the reason why his family is dead. And he's beating the crap out of Frank Castle and he's like tied to this chair. And Frank Castle starts to remember his wife and his daughter. And he gets up and he just gets into this brutal altercation with Rawlins. And I mean, just bloodies him up and starts stabbing him repeatedly, gouges his eyes out. It was one of those holy shit moments because you did not expect to see that much gore. And it was just, it kept going and it was like, oh God, I can't look away. I can't like look away, but I want to look away because it's so gruesome.
He definitely can't look away. You know what I'm saying?
No.
He's got no eyes. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, he got what he deserved. Like you build this intensity up as with the character with Frank Castle, and it finally comes to this moment where he gets to take care of business. And it was so satisfying to see that guy die. And like, I normally am not like, hoorah, violence. But I was like, this guy deserves to die. Like, he's a piece of crap. And I was so happy for Frank Castle to be able to slaughter him the way that he caused his wife and daughter to die. So,
yeah. And I just love his buddy who is a villain at this point. Just watches him do it. Just lets him do it. He's like, ah, all right, I'll let him have this one. He needs it. He deserves it.
Yeah.
I get it.
Oh, man.
All right. So cool. We've also got some listener picks. We'll kind of run through these pretty quick. But John, you want to do your two? We'll do the same order, but we'll just do them all at once.
Yeah. So Nate Bruce says, not my favorite character, but the suffering and painful death Joffrey Baratheon was fulfilling.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think everybody will agree with you on that one.
Bye, bitch.
Yeah. And then Jennifer Miller says, Charlie on Lost, not Penny's boat, was shocking, heartbreaking, and still sticks with me today. That makes a great departure to me.
Yeah.
It does. I don't know if I call that one satisfying because I always missed him once he left, but I get what she's saying.
Yeah, loved his character. Yeah.
Well, he came back like 15 different times afterwards, so it was okay.
That's true. That is true. Kyle Nolan, I love the shocking elevator shaft scene to get rid of Rosalind Shay on L.A. Law. And similarly, how things came full circle with the helicopter and Rocket Romano's exit on ER. Great ways to kill off despicable regular characters. Yeah, the L.A. Law one was fantastic.
That Rocket Romano one was amazing. That one caught me completely off guard. And it was like, it couldn't happen to a better guy either.
What was that? Like, I didn't watch ER regularly. What was that one, man?
So a couple, like the season before, there was a problem with a storm or something like that, and Romano gets part of his arm lopped off by a helicopter that was on the roof, and it was like swinging around in a weird way. Mm-hmm. So then the next season, he's kind of recouping from that, and he's kind of relearning how his position in life is, because that whole character's thing was that he was the big badass surgeon there, and that was his thing. As the season progresses, he turns into a bit of a nicer guy to some degree and starts like changing a bit because he starts realizing that he has to deal with things much differently. And then an explosion happens with a helicopter in the roof and it falls off the building on top of him. And like the ending scene is like the helicopter exploding, him looking up and then him dropping down to his fours, and the camera's basically the street looking up at him, looking past him to the helicopter coming down at him. And him going, not again!
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing.
Pretty awesome. And next, Andreas Galisel says, Clay's death on Sons of Anarchy was pretty satisfying and somehow incidental. Yeah, I agree with that. I was so happy when Clay finally died. God, thank God.
Ruthie Rink says, call this the dissenting opinion, but most of the time, I don't like it when a favorite character dies. It's so final for most shows, and I would rather they have the option to come back at some point rather than just, we're done with you now. I don't know why the TV world is so morbid.
Because that's how life is, man. People go. People go. But I will tell you, if that bothers you, Ruthie Rink, just watch Prison Break, because I've been doing it, and everybody that dies comes back. Everyone. Literally everyone.
Literally everyone.
Every single person comes back.
Like, you could have seen their head on a pike. They'll be alive the next episode.
Exactly. Exactly.
Curtis Renwick says Michael Scott on The Office was pretty satisfying. That's a good one. And Jarl Borg's death by Blood Eagle on Vikings was a good way for a warrior to go.
I didn't see that one. That sounds pretty satisfying.
Yeah, I mean, oh, yeah. Death by Blood Eagle sounds pretty vicious. I've never seen the show, but...
Do you know what the Blood Eagle thing is?
Nope.
Somebody gets basically strung up and their back gets sliced open and their ribs are all each what? Individually broken and
oh
spread out.
Oh my God.
Why? Like, who has this kind of time?
This is definitely vicious.
Apparently,
I was right.
The Vikings.
Yeah. Like, we've got nothing to do but eat, hump, and kill. Let's take our time with the last one.
Right.
All right. Well, that's our topic. I hope you guys enjoyed that. I thought it was a great topic. You know, cuties,
yeah, it was fun.
Cuties was almost its own topic.
Mm-hmm.
Practically. You guys had to make it awkward and weird.
No, they started it.
They did it. Yeah, they did it.
Just like we're 11. They started it. Finish it. All right. So any recent film or TV recommendations we haven't previously talked about that you want to mention real quick, Amanda?
Aaron's just gonna, I know. Cobra Kai, it's on Netflix. I've been watching
I hung
it.
Out with
I'm
those
in
guys.
Season two.
Hang out with them.
There, you
there's
did.
A really cool panel if you Google Cobra Kai C2E2 and you'll see a really attractive dude sitting with those two ugly guys.
Yeah.
That you know.
That's what it is. And honestly, they look so beautiful like in person too. And Billy Zabka is he seems so nice.
He
does not seem like the D-bag that he comes across as in the movie
he's
and in the first season.
He's a wonderful person.
Show.
We talked that very.
He's the hero of the show, right? Of,
he's
the
anti-hero,
he's,
I would
he's
say.
The actual good guy. I've been doing some documentaries lately, so I'll Be Gone in the Dark. I've gone through that a couple of times just because, number one, it's an interesting watch. Number two, the more times you go through it, the more things you pick up. And number three, it's done in such a great way that it's actually kind of meditative in a weird way. It's about the Golden State's killer and the story of writing the book that got him caught.
No, no, I will not let that stand. That is not how he got caught. She did not. Sorry.
Okay, the book didn't get him caught, but her investigation led them down the road that eventually got
really.
Him caught.
She gets a lot more credit for it. I mean, I know that she's gone, and that's, you know, people want to give her a lot of credit for it, especially Patton Oswalt, but most of the stuff they were going forward with before she got involved. Sorry, I'm a true crime aficionado, and that bothers me.
This is awkward.
I know. I'm sorry. All right. Love your show. I'll be quiet.
Anywho, I'm also a true crime aficionado. The stuff
wrong.
I've been paying attention
You're
to
wrong.
As... Well, whatever. Let's move on.
They caught him the same time the book came out. The book...
She's been working on the book like 20 years or something.
She wasn't working hand in hand with police the whole time. That's just...
She was a lot of the time she was.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Go...
This could
all
be
right,
a whole
anyhow,
topic too.
Moving right along to other more like HBO has cool stuff on it. The Vow, which I'll get into a little bit when we do our closing, but The Vow is another great... documentary series that they have going on right
that's
now and that's all about the NXIVM
cult
the MLM cult. It's kind of weird.
There's lots of Allison Mack is in it.
Yeah.
she ran it.
Pass.
No, she was attractive, but man, it's a weird cult.
She's super crazy though with her culty stuff.
Okay, you're missing the point. The whole point is the fact that she's crazy, so don't pass. Watch it.
true. I have one more to add. I also watched at recommendation, I think it came through the group originally, The Social Dilemma.
Oh, that's, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That is, so as somebody who's, most of us, especially at this group right here, are aware enough that everything you share on the internet is being seen, it's being tracked, it's being monitored, like nothing is private, nothing is secret. But there are a lot of details that I didn't fully understand, and it's alarming when former high-level executives of social media platforms are like, no, I don't like to use social media, I don't let my kids use it. And the correlation rate of suicide in preteen and teenage girls with social media, and there's just so much information in it. It's a really well done documentary because it has the elements of interviews, but it also has a component of fictional storytelling and showing.
It almost like bad Unsolved Mysteries reenactments.
Yeah,
going to take your phone for 7 days. Well, what does that mean? How am I going to live? Mom. Those are a little awkward.
It's got the dude from Booksmart, though, and that was fun to see him.
Sure.
So anyway, that's a documentary that you should definitely check out.
His career's going great, right?
Stop.
But here's the thing. It's like when you watch that, which it is a very good documentary, I agree, on Netflix, I really feel like it's just confirming what people already suspect, but it's confirming it from people that worked on it. So they're telling you, everybody that's telling you, don't take surveys, don't do this, don't do that, they're not lying to you. Like, all this stuff is for a reason. They're collecting everything you own. We used to be so, people right now are so freaked out about taking a vaccine potentially because there might be a microchip that they're going to inject into your bloodstream or whatever conspiracy theory is going around.
Damn you, Bill Gates. Yeah,
but everything on your phone does so much more than any microchip ever could. So what are you freaking out?
Well, and I think the concerning part that I took away from it was not necessarily that me as a person is basically being sold. Well, no, is being sold to advertisers, but that they have found and been able to prove and track that social media can change the psychological state of your mind and can influence your behavior in a very real way. They can realistically take money from advertisers and say, what do you want to happen, and make that happen in the real world.
Right.
And that's the very scary part to understand.
Absolutely.
The manipulation.
It'll make you look at your phone and probably get scared.
It's making me want to like check out of all social media, if I'm being honest.
Yeah. And I just get a little terrified. Like, seriously, like I'm now looking at my phone like you look at that ex-girlfriend you just can't get rid of. That's how I'm looking at my phone right now. Like, why are you always here? Like, every time I show up at McDonald's, you're in the parking lot. How is that possible, you psycho? You know, it's like that.
Because I have your phone.
Exactly. I want to mention The Boys, because we haven't had a chance to talk about it, but The Boys is back on Amazon Prime. They're weekly now, which means the whole series isn't going to be done. And
it's aggravating.
Well, let's discuss this, okay? So,
well, that's why I haven't watched it yet.
They dropped three, and now they're doing a week. So there's four episodes out there at the time of this recording. It'll be five probably for most people when they hear this. I like it because I can get caught up. I don't have to binge it all at once to not worry about spoilers. So I can and actually talk to people every week. But you don't like that, John.
I don't like it because this show didn't introduce itself to me that
way.
Which is fair. And it's like Mandalorian. Mandalorian, I'll expect that to show up weekly, and that's fine, and I'll appreciate it for what it is, but it's not doing the same. Like, and I'm sure Mandalorian has something to do with their choice to push something out like that on a weekly basis, because with Mandalorian, there was just so much buzz, and that buzz carried week by week by week by week. But the problem here is that we don't have a cute little baby monster running around that will, you know...
It's a child.
Whatever. It's a monster. It's an alien. Like, we don't have a cute little baby to get attached to, or a guy wearing some uniform that looks like some other uniform or some other moron that we all love and want to see more of, or some other stuff that people tell me all about. So all we have is a bunch of guys who are actually everybody in the show is an a-hole. And yeah, it should be there all the time because it's just not drawing the same sort of buzz as like their target drive is, I think.
There's some shows that are just not meant to be week to week. Like Lovecraft Country, I have such a hard time. That's why I'm just waiting for it to finish and then I'll just binge it all at once. Things like A Million Little Things, that's like an ABC show, I can watch that week to week and like watch the episodes when it comes up. I don't want to wait for The Boys to finish another episode and then I come back and I have to recap what happened because I forgot because I watched all these other shows in the interim. It's just too much.
Man, I like it. I really do. I mean, I get what everybody's saying, though, because it did start off as a binge show. I think you should probably stay with whatever format you got. And the showrunners, Eric Kripke, he said that a lot of it was because so much happens in every episode. He wanted to break it up so that people would have those water cooler moments like they do with Mandalorian or like they do with Game of Thrones. And hopefully, you know, just get people talking about the show. I just think you already have that fan base that expects it to be binged. And they're already raving about it to everyone. I don't know if this builds an audience for them.
Yeah, I don't think it. I don't think it does. But I do respect what they're doing for the same reasons you do. It does give people a chance to have those water cooler moments. I don't have anyone to have those water cooler moments with besides you or anybody in the group. But because
who does
of the social dilemma. Of the social dilemma that I don't spend so much time on the internet anymore because, I don't know, I kind of want to live my life a little bit and not be, you know, feeding my phone more information about what to do with me later.
I just started giving dictation. Hey, phone, so I'm peeing right now. What are you up to? I just do that all day.
Don't get me started.
Oh, and I did catch America's penis floating around the internet, so I got that.
Who didn't?
Right?
I looked at it.
I didn't see America's penis. I just saw everything that happened afterwards. No.
I think the more important thing here is that he has a photo that's a picture of him. It kind of looks like a mugshot, and it says, guard that thing. But it's funny.
Yeah.
That's what's important.
It is funny. But
he has that on his phone. Yeah, but it's super funny.
It is. It is funny.
It's a recent, that's a recent image he has on his phone.
No, it's from Scott Pilgrim. Anyway, share your thoughts on this episode or anything else in our Facebook group on Twitter at BuyPopcorn, and our site is thehollywoodoutsider.com. Don't forget, if you want to win a digital copy of Psycho at thehollywoodoutsider.com, I wouldn't harm a fly, your name, send it. Do it. You need it by the 22nd or you don't qualify. That's just how it works. Ho teachable minute. John, what do you got?
All right, so I talked about a little bit ago, I talked about The Vow on HBO, and I got to tell you, I watched the first episode of this thing, and I will be honest, if the first episode was any indication of what kind of people this MLM / Scientology thing was, which is basically what the whole NXIVM cult was, it was like one part Scientology, one part MLM, I would have probably drank the Kool-Aid with them, for sure. Like, everything they were talking about in the first episode, I'm like, that's really great. I mean, that's really positive. And everyone seems really awesome. Look at the kind of great things they're doing. And then it's not until the second episode that they're talking like, the first 5 days, we started kissing each other on the mouth. I would have been like, come again?
Did you recognize Sarah as Crazy Gina from Psych?
Yes. Oh, my God. Yes.
Yeah. That was pretty funny. As soon as she started talking... And she's like talking about her experience with this cult. And I'm like, well, of course you're in a cult. You're Crazy Gina from Psych.
Yeah.
Of course you are. But yeah, it's an uncomfortable show to watch. Because I'm not with you. I wouldn't have drank the Kool-Aid. Because the whole time, 5 seconds in, I'm like, these guys are idiots.
Like, I'm trying to be honest as far as the whole thing goes. Because I went into this.
I appreciate that. But I guess I'm too cynical for things like this.
Well, see, that's, you know, and that's what it is. Like, there's a part where the whole Keith Rainier guy talks about how skepticism is looking for answers. Cynicism is looking for negatives. And, like, I like that saying. The guy is batshit crazy, and he deserves to be locked up. But he's not wrong.
I mean, they brand people. At that point, that really, if no other indicator was your indicator that this is a concern, branding should definitely pique your attention, and you'll know it when you get there if you watch it.
I'll be honest. The first 5 days would have gone the first couple times, been like, oh, these guys are doing great. But as soon as like I saw what happens in the first 5 days, I would have been like, all right, I'm out. I'm totally out, because this is I do have a really good sensor for MLMs or when people are trying to sell me on an MLM, and I have a guttural reaction to that.
Yeah.
But if I'm also being honest, there's a chance they could have gotten me. There's at least a 40% chance they could have gotten me. And I don't know. I could have been a better person for it. Much more positive, much more happier.
Maybe. Could have joined a sex cult too. My favorite part was like watching as the show progresses, and all I kept thinking was, how do you get from pyramid scheme to sex cult? Because I want to master that. Like,
right?
That leap is fantastic to me, and I want to know how they do it. So that's where I was the whole time. Once you learn,
you want to be able to brand girls in their bikini line with I'm a ho. Is that, or guys? I mean, we're not going to be discerning, no, right?
Equal opportunity, absolutely. If they're willing participants, I don't really need a branding thing. But I was it was fascinating to me, because I'm like, how do you make that leap? And then you hear how it happens, and you're like, really? But you kind of get it. I don't get it, but I mean, with these particular people, I kind of get it. Yeah. They're all desperate for acceptance.
Side note, MLM stands for multi-level marketing. That's the pyramid scheme thing, if people don't know. You guys just kept saying the acronym, and I was like, I wonder if there are people who are just like, what the heck is an MLM?
Well, and they keep throwing out ESP. That means extra stupid people. That means that, too.
Right. I just assumed our listeners were smart and, you know, well-rounded people, and I was giving them all the credit. But thanks for calling them stupid, Amanda.
Jeez. You're the one who just called them stupid. What if they just weren't familiar with the acronym or forgot it, and then you just decided to call them stupid?
That's beautiful spin. That's beautiful. I love that. All right.
Wait, so you get to interrupt my retort?
Yeah, because she got you. You're done. You got nothing else to add.
Get me?
She's done. You're done.
You got...
I didn't get got.
We're out of here. Remember, guys, the next time you head to the theater, buy popcorn. We'll be back. Next week is a Psycho episode. We'll have the winners on that episode, and then we'll be back the following week. We'll be back.
We'll see.